Perfect. Thank you, everyone, for coming to this session on this last day. I'm Laura Fox, and I am the Director of the Office of Chronic Disease Prevention at the Baltimore City Health Department. And before being the Director of the Office of Chronic Disease, I was the Program Coordinator for the Virtual Supermarket Program that I'm going to spend the next few minutes talking about. So I have no relationships to disclose. So the purpose of my presentation is going to talk about how online grocery ordering is a food desert elimination strategy, as well as how online grocery ordering is a solution for older adults living within food deserts. I'm going to talk about the evolution of the program and how it's changed over time to really target the older adult population, how to implement a similar program, and some of our preliminary program results. So the goal of the virtual supermarket program is to increase access to healthy and affordable food. Now, a lot of you might think, you know, isn't it about behavior change and changing nutrition and dietary patterns? And that's our long-term goal. But the first step is actually just to even provide that equal access to healthy and affordable food that many of us take for granted. We also want to show how online grocery ordering, which has been around for many, many years now, over 10 years with groups like Peapod and Safeway that do home delivery, but it's really been only applied in six-figure income families, mothers with multiple children. It really hasn't been applied in a lower income population, as well as showing how public-private partnerships can be achieved, as well as the acceptance of EBT, which is your electronic benefit transfer card, which holds food stamps. This, until recently, was the only program in the country that did online ordering and was able to accept food stamps. For those of you that don't know, there's actually a USDA federal policy barrier that prohibits the use of your EBT card from use online. And so how we kind of get around that is we actually just have our residents pay when they pick up their groceries. And that allows us to be in full compliance with the USDA for everything that we do for our program. So how does the program work? So the program actually originated in libraries, and now our program model is shifted dramatically, and we are mostly within senior housing facilities at this point. And how it works is we have either there's a computer lab there or we provide laptops there. And we train community members that live within those buildings to actually run the program. So we call them neighborhood food advocates. And the food advocates in every senior building we've been in, there's at least two very highly tech-savvy seniors that are very good with internet, computers. They've taught us things about the program that we didn't know before in terms of online ordering. And it allows them to also kind of take a leadership role within their communities. And so we work with them to set up the program within their communities, and they pick the ordering times and the delivery times. And what happens is most other residents are not computer and tech savvy. And when our program was at the libraries, we still found low internet and computer literacy. So it was important to have other people there to help residents place their orders. So, you know, if you wanted to come down and you weren't tech savvy, they set up the hours that they choose that they think are best for their residents. Some of our housing developments, it's all around when the different soap operas are on, depending on when they just pick their hours. And we leave it up to them to set that up. And they come down, you sit down, you place your order in next to them. They get delivered inside, and the delivery fee for the resident is free. So the health department pays that delivery fee, and it's a reduced delivery fee to a grocer. Because what we're trying to do is provide equal access to healthy and affordable food. Because, you know, if I own a car, it doesn't cost me very much to get to a grocery store. But through community food assessments and research done in Baltimore, it was found, you know, even if a senior could take a bus to the grocery store, many residents, seniors, and other residents take what we call in Baltimore a hack, which is an unofficial cab, back from the grocery store. I don't know about in your cities, but they just wait outside. They wait outside the front, they're not official, and for the seniors, they actually really like to take advantage of them. You get in the taxi, it's $10, well, we have a lot of lights, it's going to be $20. And they know they don't have another option, or they can't get home otherwise with their groceries, so it's a population that really needs our help. And we just do a 1 hour pickup window, and we have to have this kind of 1 hour window because everyone pays when they pick up their groceries, and that really has to do with the USDA requirement to pay for food stamps, as well as our program takes cash. Because in seniors, having cash and EBT in our low income population is what most people pay with. Some people do pay with their credit or debit cards, as well as we offer other things besides for food with the program. Unfortunately, the grocery store we had partnered with didn't have a pharmacy, but you could still get toilet paper and paper towels, as well as quarters for laundry, or most neighborhoods in Baltimore, they don't have ATMs. And so some of the seniors would get cash back from their debit card just like they were going to the grocery store. So we tried to make it really a full-scale and full-service grocery store experience. So this is a little bit about the evolution of the program. So the program's been around for about 3.5 years now. But the program has shifted dramatically in terms of even technology. So when the program started, it was actually just in two libraries within Baltimore City. Residents had to come to the libraries during specific hours, pick up their libraries during specific hours, but it wasn't necessarily the most convenient. Actually, especially for our senior population who we found were really using the program because it was still, even though the libraries in Baltimore City are incredible, there's 22 of them, they're centrally located within almost every neighborhood within Baltimore, but you still have to get your groceries home from there. So there was still a little bit of a barrier. We figured out we provided carts for $10, those grocery push carts, for a nominal fee, trying to figure out every kind of method we could do to make it a little bit easier, but still there was a barrier. That following year of the program, we were able to get promotion codes set up so people could order from any computer anywhere that were tech savvy and just pick up at our pickup location. Still, the uptake wasn't quite what we wanted, and that's when we kind of developed the neighborhood food advocates. And the neighborhood food advocates are, we hired a community organizer, which has been a key asset to our program, and basically he's been able to then work, and we work directly with the communities to run the program, set up the program, and that's kind of been able to take our program really to the next level. And then in 2012, we launched in two senior housing sites. The following year, we launched in public housing, trying to target families as well. And then we launched in one more senior building, and by next summer, we're hoping to have 4 new senior buildings within Baltimore City. So again, our sites are selected based off of criteria and food deserts within Baltimore, and I'll go over that in just a second. But the other thing is, we might think that the program's great in your senior building or where you live. But we come to you, we present the program to you, and then we ask you to recontact us and say, are you ready? Do you want this program here? And unless a few of the residents or resident coordinator kind of helps bring that together, we don't open a site there because we want the drive to be actually from the community because they have to run the program and we want it to be embedded within theirs. So we set it up and then they really run it themselves. We collect monthly data from them in terms of the number of orders. And they call us when they have problems or if things arise, but they really run it themselves. And that has proven to be more beneficial even than we thought. The program staff, there's a program coordinator, a community organizer, and then a part-time assistant, and that's it. And there's 7 sites throughout the city. So our site selection criteria, the Baltimore City, we're really lucky to have Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and the Center for a Livable Future, because they're able to provide us with a lot of great research and resources. And so in a collaboration between them and the city, we were able to develop a food desert map. The food desert map in Baltimore City is 1/4 mile to the nearest supermarket, 185% of the poverty line, low vehicle ownership, as well as a low food availability score, because unfortunately in Baltimore, not all grocery stores are created equal. And so there are differences within the quality of food. And so that actually goes into the calculation. But our site selection criteria for our program is 1/2 mile to the nearest supermarket, within a food desert or bordering a food desert. We look at household poverty levels in the community, health outcomes, as well as community interest. And I must emphasize that that's a really big part of it, that the community is really interested in having the program there. But as I said, it's a food access program, but you must provide nutrition education alongside of it. So we do $10 off every 4th order for healthy food purchases. We do food demonstrations, we hand out recipe cards, and we partner with other groups like the Extension groups in Baltimore, the American Heart Association, to come in and do comprehensive nutrition education for our populations. We don't have a nutritionist on staff at the health department, or else we would do it, but so we have great partners who come in and do it for us. So again, why these senior buildings? And the buildings that we're in are senior and disabled housing buildings, and so some of the buildings are all seniors, but some have some younger populations there as well. Mobility is a big issue that we've come across, that even if you build a grocery store that's not that far away within these communities, it's still very difficult for many seniors to get there. Carrying heavy things like bottled water or bleach, it's very difficult. We had talked to a lot of seniors about that there was a perceived burden on their families, that they had to ask their relatives to take them. They felt like they should pay for the gas, even though their income was low, that they couldn't ask their family members to do other things for them. It's also been a good opportunity to engage these communities around food. Some of them have shown movies now and done little skits and plays, kind to engage their fellow residents around healthy eating and food. So in terms of our neighborhood food advocates, this is a little bit of a sneak peek. We're trying to get a publication done right now. We did a qualitative assessment of our neighborhood food advocates, looking at how they felt the program impacted them and their residents. And, you know, some of what we saw is that not only did it improve their access to food, but it got them to know their neighbors that they didn't know, and for them to be leaders and for their neighbors to get to know each other. I mean, I know of one resident who's in the building, and she really only comes out of her apartment to order her groceries and to pick up her groceries. If it were up to her, she would call down to the food advocate, but the food advocate knows better and says, no, you have to get dressed and come down. And after the groceries are picked up, people hang out. They sit around, and so it provides this other opportunity for, you know, community engagement that you wouldn't necessarily think, and everyone needs groceries. So program statistics. So we have, in total, 443 unique customers over the program. You know, as we've opened up in the buildings, it's really kind of taken off, and over $105,000 worth of groceries. And I will say, it's important to, you know, partner with a grocery store that already has an online grocery delivery system, because this program, in many ways, the scale is really small. And so even when you work with senior buildings and housing developments, it might not necessarily be enough scale to support a whole grocery store having an online infrastructure, but it's enough to supplement it as well. So this is one of our Montclair resident. In our abstract, and our goal was to at least have 30%. We assume that 30% of the people that live there use the program. We've seen much greater than that. So 51 of 109 units use the program, and our return rate is 74.5%. And for a community-based program, we feel pretty well about, you know, these customers coming. A lot of them, they came during the first week when it was new, and they got $10 off, and it was something they were trying. But for some people, I will say online grocery ordering isn't for everyone. You know, a lot of people really do want to touch and feel their food. However, it is a great solution to a transportation barrier in order to get groceries. Our Cherry Hill Senior Manor, 50% of the people there use the program, and almost 70% have come back at least twice. And most of the people come back, I would say, almost every month at least, to use the program. Our program is there every week, and we feel very strongly about that, because produce and other healthy items don't necessarily last longer than a week or two. A lot of the residents, if you ask them, they're like, just come once a month when our checks come, or come every 2 weeks. But we feel very strongly that we want to provide the access to them to come every single week for them. Our Wayland Village, this is our newest site. 43% use the program, and we have almost a 70% return rate there as well. And so we feel very strongly that these are great signs of success for the program. And then in terms of, you know, evaluation, this comes from our qualitative evaluation. I'll say I do get more healthy things like vegetables and definitely fruit, things that I wouldn't have easy access to if the virtual supermarket wasn't here. And so this just showing that, you know, it's here to make it easier for them to obtain these foods that aren't necessarily within their communities. All these communities have many corner stores, but they really don't have full-scale grocery stores. So lessons learned. I would say accepting food stamps is a big lesson in terms of being able to pick it up. That you have to be able to admit when programs don't really work. And I would say to our libraries, it really didn't work that well. And that, you know, our program location in terms of embedding it within senior buildings is a really great model for the program moving forward, and as well as the community-based approach and having them run the program. Future directions, just scaling up in different senior buildings using our community-based model. We are almost done with our guide for setting it up in other cities, and we are going to be publishing hopefully soon qualitative evaluation data, as well as we have 3 years now of food data of what people have been ordering, and we're going to start mining through that as well. So I just want to thank you for coming to our presentation, as well as all of the staff that work on the virtual supermarket program. So thank you, and I think we're going to do questions at the end.